for joining us. I'm Diane Rehm. Tires imported from China represent about 17% of the U.S. tire market. These imports have been blamed for the loss of thousands of American jobs. But a bigger concern to some economists and business leaders is the risk of a full-blown trade war. Joining me in the studio to talk about what rising protectionism could mean for U.S.-China relations and the global economy, Robert Scott of the Economic Policy Institute, Albert Keitel of the Atlantic Council, and C. Fred Bergsten of the Peterson Institute for International Economics. Do join us 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. And don't forget, you can reach us on Facebook and Twitter. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Thank you all for being here. Robert Scott, give us some of the background on this particular trade skirmish.
Well, imports from China have tripled over the last 4 years, between 2004 and 2008. We've lost about 5,000 jobs in the U.S. tire industry. The increase in imports from China almost exactly matches a decline in domestic production and domestic share of the U.S. market. So this industry has been injured. We negotiated a special agreement with China when they entered the World Trade Organization in 2000. And that agreement provided for relief for domestic industries, for U.S. industries, when imports surged and when they injured the domestic industry. And that's exactly what we had here. We had a surge of imports, and we had loss of jobs and businesses closing plants.
Is that how you see it, Bert Keitel?
Well, my view on this is a cross between agnosticism and cheering and worry. I think that my overall view is that the United States and China have embarked on such a strong policy of engagement since before President Obama took office that they've taken a number of risks domestically, politically, both sides for being too soft on the other side. So that, for example, I think President Obama took a lot of heat this spring when he refused to cite China as a manipulator of its currency. And that would have strengthened calls in Congress for across-the-board very high tariff rates. So he's in a bit of trouble with some of his major backers in the economy. And the Chinese as well have been burned as leaders by investing in American securities that then crashed, and a lot of heat about being too soft on America. And so in my mind, they need spats in order to be tough, and that the scale of this is small enough that it really qualifies as a great spat. But that said, we're in a downturn in the world economy in which other people might take this as an example of how to treat their own problems. And so here I think the important point is that we have laws. And the beauty of this solution is it's not really a war. It's in fact a referral to an intermediation service, which is the WTO. And therefore, where both parts are engaged. The first thing the Chinese did when business opened in the world on Monday morning was to ask for meeting and talks at the WTO. And as we've just heard, this whole process in U.S. law is sanctified by our agreement with China and in the WTO negotiations that if there is a surge, that we can implement safeguards, and we can only do it now for a few more years, but we could do it if it really disturbs our economy. And so there is a legal basis for that, and then our International Trade Commission recommended 55%. President Obama came in with only 35%. So there's a lot of room for moderation, and President Obama is going to meet President Hu in roughly a week, and they can have joint statements, or they can talk about it, or they can appear tough. That's not, I can't gauge what the best way for them as politicians to act is, but I see it as basically a healthy palliative to what is a very successful and promising strong engagement commitment.
Fred Bergsten, a great spat or something far more important?
Something far more important, Diane. As you said at the outset, there are two dimensions to this issue. One is the impact on the U.S. economy. There, I think the decision is very bad and indeed totally ineffectual. U.S. companies do not make the kinds of tires that we've been importing from China. There's no sign that U.S. production or jobs will increase as a result of deflecting the imports from China. The U.S. will simply import the same kinds of tires from the other countries, which incidentally we now import four times as much from as we do from China. So there's plenty of alternative supply. U.S. consumers will turn to those alternatives. There will be no increase in U.S. investment, production, or jobs. It's ineffectual in its own terms. But second and more important, the world is still in a very delicate recovery from the deepest global economic crisis since the 1930s. There's been a global strategy for coping with that global crisis. We've had two G20 summits to work that out. We have another one in Pittsburgh next week, chaired by President Obama. One of the centerpieces, central themes of that entire global strategy has been to avoid increased trade protection. We all knew that a deep crisis like this could lead to a big outbreak of trade protection, even reminiscent of the 1930s. The countries have therefore all solemnly agreed not to do so, even when it is legal. There are plenty of legal loopholes in the WTO. Our own efforts may be legal, as in this case, under our own law. But it is very bad policy for the world's biggest country, the progenitor of the entire global recovery strategy, the chair of next week's G20 summit, which is trying to extend and make sure that strategy works now that some recovery from the crisis looks likely, and for the U.S. to throw it away on an effort that will not create any jobs at home anyway is a huge mistake.
Fred Berkston, he's director of the Peterson Institute for International Economics. He's the author of China's Rise. Albert Keitel, he's senior fellow at the Atlantic Council, and Robert Scott of the Economic Policy Institute. I look forward to hearing your thoughts, your opinions. Do join us, 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. Well, you've heard Fred Berkston say it's bad policy, not only for the United States, since the U.S. is going to seek tires from other sources, if not China, and it's bad policy for the world at large as it seeks to enhance and repair a fractured global economy. What's your reaction, Robert Scott?
Well, on the first point, the ITC looked at exactly the question of what the impact is going to be of this relief on the domestic industry. They found, in fact, that tire production in the U.S. would increase substantially, about anywhere from 2 to 4%.
If
relief was granted, the U.S. production would increase, and the increase would be larger than the increase of imports from other countries. So the U.S. benefits the most in this case, according to the estimates of the ITC.
Let me ask you, where precisely are these jobs in the United States? Do we know?
The tire plants are spread throughout the eastern half of the country. A few in New York State, but mostly in the southern states,
right.
Southeast.
What about his point on the global economy?
Well, in fact, this relief is simply an affirmation of trade rules. It means that when you negotiate rules with the United States, they're going to be enforced. I think it gives the U.S. and politicians here and abroad comfort to go forth and negotiate new trade agreements, knowing that rules will be enforced.
Rules, Fred Berkston, aren't they important? Aren't they important to American workers? Aren't they important to the good word of the U.S. government?
Absolutely. And the U.S. should be very rigorous in enforcing its trade laws. But it should only do so in cases where it's going to help the U.S. economy. I've argued it won't. Robert says it would have a very modest 2 to 4% increase in production. That would be the maximum. 5,000 jobs, he suggested in his opening comments, were lost. Even if those numbers were correct, and I doubt them because I think there'll just be a shift to other sources for the imports,
that would be tiny, tiny numbers in the context of the U.S. economy. There's a bigger problem here, however. The Obama administration, unfortunately, does not really have a trade policy. If this enforcement action had been taken in the context of a policy, like most presidents have had before, of opening markets, of expanding trade, of negotiating to open foreign markets and reducing barriers to U.S. exports, of having a positive, progressive, expansionary trade policy, then this would be taken in stride, I must say, including by me. The problem is that with the Obama administration having taken no positive initiatives on trade throughout its 9 months in office, this is viewed as trade policy.
Seems like a fairly short time, however, to have taken a major trade policy and made it its own.
Except that the administration inherited a number of progressive trade policies from its predecessor. There are three major free trade agreements that were negotiated by the previous administration, but languishing in the Congress, in part because the administration hasn't even sent them up for action. The administration inherited the Doha round of multilateral talks in the World Trade Organization. That offers lots of opportunity for the U.S. economy, huge numbers compared with what we're talking about in this very small individual case. But the administration, in truth, has done nothing to advance it. The problem, Diane, and we know this from trade history, when you do not move forward toward liberalization, you leave a policy vacuum into which you always backslide toward protection, and this case is a perfect example thereof.
Fred Bergsten of the Peterson Institute for International Economics. Short break, right back. And we're talking about tires, but not just tires. We're talking about trade in the larger sense. The president has said he would impose a tariff on China's import of tires to this country, threatening in the minds of many economists a rising protectionism on the part of this country. Do join us, 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. Robert Scott is here from the Economic Policy Institute. He believes that imposing this kind of tariff will be important to protecting the tire manufacturing group in this country. Fred Bergsten of the Peterson Institute for International Economics believes that it is doing nothing that will really help the United States. Here's an email from Kurt in Byron, Illinois. He says, our free trade policies of the past 30 years have dug us into the hole we are in with jobless recoveries and declining middle-class incomes. He says Newsweek has charts of imports and exports since 2006 for the U.S., Japan, China, and Germany, U.S. imports have been twice that of exports. None of the others come close to that ratio. Everybody else fights for the jobs of their workers. Why don't we? Bert Keitel.
Well, I think the caller makes an interesting point that there has been a huge surge in the U.S. trade deficit, and actually going back to the 1990s. And research I've done shows that, in fact, this probably is caused most directly by the expansion in U.S. buying power because of the deregulation and non-regulation of the U.S. financial system, that we have created a kind of super money up until it fell apart last year. And that super money allowed us to import oil. It allowed us to import a huge surplus of exports from Northern Europe and also then from non-China East Asia. And finally, late in the game in 2005, from China, when China tried to cut back. In a way, the U.S. was exporting inflation because it could import so many products that were cheap. And so I would say that it's not the imports that are displacing America, although we have had this surge. That this is the irregular, sort of cyclical, sometimes strong, sometimes weak progress in technology and productivity in the U.S. economy, which means our workers need to retool. They need to change. We have trade adjustment assistance, which is underfunded and hasn't been actually applied adequately. And we need to have a portable health care. We need to have portable pension systems, things that can make our labor force much more productive and allow it to shift in other directions. The imports themselves are a symptom, not a cause.
Robert Scott, there are cynics out there who would say that the reason the president has taken this action with regard to China and tires is to appease the unions here in this country that need to be reacted to positively.
Well, I think that there are many workers who've been hurt by the growing trade deficits the U.S. has accumulated. As the caller says, you know, the email says, you know, these deficits have been growing since the mid-1970s, especially since 2000. We've lost over 5 million manufacturing jobs, and that's strongly correlated with the growth in these trade deficits. So while Fred thinks that these are good agreements, and he says they create jobs, in fact, they tend to displace domestic workers, and that's the problem. We have a failed trade policy, and we need to take a time out and find out why that policy isn't working. One thing the president did promise voters during his campaign was he was going to enforce U.S. fair trade laws, including this China 421 strategy, what we're talking about today, which relates to surges of imports. And so he's done that in this case. I don't think we're going to do any damage to U.S. interests by taking out a year or two and reassessing our trade policy. I disagree with Fred's description of what he calls what's known as the bicycle theory of trade policy, that if you don't keep going, you're going to fall off. I think we can keep going for a long time.
Fred.
It may shock emailer Kurt and my colleagues, but we need to put a few facts on the table. Over the last 3 years, the U.S. trade deficit has been cut in half. It came down from a peak of about $700 billion and 6% of the GDP in 2006 to this year, down probably close to $300 billion and about 3% of the GDP.
Does everybody agree on those figures?
I would just question the starting year. Most of that
no, you said
fall
since
has
2006.
Happened in the last year. But
no.
But there's a huge drop since the crisis hit.
No. It started coming down in 2006. All the way through 2008, the sharp improvement in our trade balance kept our economy growing. Domestic demand in the United States started to decline in late 2007, well before the height of the crisis. Our trade balance improved sharply all through that period. The U.S. was becoming much more competitive. The exchange rate of the dollar had come down by 25% over the previous 5 years, eliminated much of the overvaluation that had hurt us very badly, made us more competitive. So trade gains kept our economy growing, kept some job growth in place all through 2008. In the first half of this year, in the teeth of the crisis, continued improvement in the trade balance dampened the effect of the recession, kept it from being worse than it would have been. So let's get our facts right. One other point. We've calculated at our institute the impact of the last 50 years of globalization on the U.S. economy. Our calculation is that the U.S. economy is about $1 trillion per year richer as a result of the improved efficiency, improved productivity, lower consumer costs, higher wages for exports, all the things that come from bigger trade. It's a clear benefit. There are adjustment costs, I fully agree, and we need to do a much better job of helping the downsides, the costs, and the losers. But on balance, it's been a huge gain for the United States.
All right. We talked about a 17% share of the U.S. tire market. What was that share 3 years ago, Robert Scott?
It was about in 2004 was when his case started. It was about 4%.
Okay.
For the Chinese.
So therein lies the so-called surge. What, in your mind, would constitute a fair share for the Chinese to have of the U.S. tire market?
Well, I think if China stopped practicing its unfair trade policies, policies like manipulation of its currency to make it artificially cheap, policies like requiring tire makers, such as Cooper Tire, who build new plants in China to export 100% of their production. These are things we don't do in this country. So if they played fair the way we do, I think China's share of the U.S. tire market might be 5 or 10%, not 17%, and not growing in a way that triples over a period of 4 years.
But I want to go back to the point that Bert made at the outset, namely that the two countries are engaged. They're engaged through the WTO, and you see this as a positive step.
That's right, Diane. And they're engaged, I would say, also in a bilateral sense in ways that were unimaginable 20 years ago after Tiananmen, for example. And it's an engagement that has so many promises, whether it's global warming or trade or health risks. So that engagement is really important. And I wouldn't argue with Fred that globalization has helped the American economy. The question is, at what pace and at what cost? And do we need to slow it down here and there? And on that, we've made agreements with the Chinese that we have. And what is it? What constitutes a surge? This is the kind of thing that you take to an intermediation force, which is the WTO. And so on the details, this is a very good example of where we don't want to encourage protectionism. And I've written a great deal about that danger. But the Chinese trade surplus globally has come down dramatically.
How long do the U.S. and China have to resolve this dispute before the WTO?
Well, they're going to have, negotiations for about 60 days. And then if they don't reach a resolution, then they can China could appeal to a dispute resolution panel. And that can take, two or three years to finally reach a decision. So it's unlikely that that's going to actually come to a conclusion before these remedies are actually lifted. They're only going to last 3 years.
All right. And in this period that we're talking about regarding this surge, you've had how many factories close? Four?
I believe at least five. That are identified in this case.
And would you expect more to close while these negotiations go on?
Three companies have announced plans to close plants and eliminate another 3,000 jobs. I looked at the overall industry, which is a little more broadly defined. We've lost 10,000 jobs just since the beginning of the recession in the U.S.
Fred, what do you think President Obama should have done, could have done, to be a more forthright and forward-thinking person on this issue?
I think he should have addressed directly the problems of the dislocated workers who have already lost jobs as a result of the increase in tire imports.
By so-called retraining.
Retraining, what's been called expedited trade adjustment assistance, which means cash grants, relocation grants, training subsidies, extended unemployment insurance, a lot of direct supports for the people who were hurt without messing up trade policy and the world. and the global recovery strategy that I talked about.
Why hasn't that been done, Robert
Well,
Scott?
The problem is we're in the middle of the Great Depression, the largest recession we've had since at least the Second World War.
So there's no money for all that.
There's no money, and there are no jobs out there for these people to be retrained for, and that's the key problem. There are 10 million people who lack a job right now.
Diane, to be clear, there is money. In the fiscal stimulus bill, and to its great credit, the Congress dramatically expanded the Trade Adjustment Assistance Program. It doubled the amount of money. It expanded the authorities in many ways, including to cover the services sector, never been covered before. So the money is there. The Labor Department, in fact, has problem getting it out as fast as it should to help the workers. In this case, taking that money that's already there, directing the Labor Department to give it to the tire workers who've been impacted would have been a very helpful step.
But the whole political process here is quite important, because if you really want to help laid-off workers, one of the best things you can do is make sure that they can keep their health care. And so he's facing a real political problem where he needs friends all around the country to help him push this. And so politicians have a difficult job, and the call that he makes about what's the best way to help American workers could be, we've got to get this health care done now, and that will really make it a lot easier for workers to leave their old jobs, find new ones, without the terror, really, of being left without health insurance.
Kurt, let me ask you what you think the reaction is among other trading partners of the United States to the president's actions.
I don't have any direct line to what they think. You can only hope that they will say that this is a U.S.-China spat. They have an agreement. There is a law that they
both
signed.
It doesn't have anything to do with us.
There will be some protectionist forces that will say in these political processes around the world, look, the United States is doing it. You got to help me, too. And what we have to say at the G20 is that if you're going to introduce some kind of protection, it better be based in the bilateral agreements that you have or the multilateral agreements through the WTO and be backed up by law and open itself up to reconciliation through the WTO, or else you're going to be in the doghouse.
And what about
Bert, that's a bit vacuous. Look, you want President Obama to go to Pittsburgh next week and say, do what I say, but don't do what I do.
No, do what I do. If we have laws and we have our own International Trade Commission saying this is necessary, recommending a tariff because we clearly have what we call measurable, and that's disputable, and that can be settled, you could say, in the WTO over time. If you have a case like that, do as I do. But don't reconstrue this as some sort of overall protection. The way, for example, Fred, that those programs to add tariffs on all Chinese products that were proposed over the years because of exchange rate so-called violations. That was clearly draconian and outside the WTO.
At 26 before the hour, you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. What about President Sarkozy in France demanding tariffs on imports from countries that, for example, don't have strong cap and trade policies? Is this sort of part of that, or is it totally separate?
It's indirectly related, but it's very important. There's a global effort underway to create a new regime to limit climate change degradation, carbon emissions. Every country is in the process domestically, and we are, legislation has passed the House, to put a domestic regime in place to do that. There's a quite legitimate concern in every country that if it puts on its own controls on carbon emissions and thereby raises costs to domestic industry, they will be disadvantaged from import competition from countries like China, which do not seem likely to put similar controls on carbon emissions, raise the cost of their own companies. So there's got to be a new international agreement, either in the climate change talks or in the World Trade Organization, to reconcile these imperatives of dealing with climate change, but avoiding a big hit to the world trade system. This could be the big new front for protectionist trade policies, including as a cover to do things that countries and people like Sarkozy sometimes want to do anyway.
But it's not, I think it's not likely to get much traction if it just comes out as a bilateral, sort of a unilateral position by one country. Those countries would have to get together in large groups, and they would probably then pair off developed countries that already pollute on a per capita basis at a very high level against developing countries who want to grow, as President Clinton once said, you know, their problem is they want to be like us. Well, You therefore need, as Fred says, a multilateral agreement in which there are transfers to polluting poor countries that help them introduce the technology. Otherwise, they can't afford it.
Right. But Diane, here's the linkage.
Wait, I want to get to one thing before the break for Robert Scott. Wall Street editorial the other day asked what it means for the world economy if America has the first protectionist president since Herbert Hoover. Is that fair?
I think the premise is wrong. This is not a protectionist move. This is a president simply implementing the rules that have been were set up by President Clinton and implemented by President Bush to bring China into the WTO. It's simply playing fair according to the rules of the game.
Robert Scott, he's with the Economic Policy Institute. Bert Keitel, he's at the Atlantic Council. And Fred Bergsten of the Peterson Institute. When we come back, I'm looking forward to hearing all of your comments, your questions. Join us on 800-433-8850.
National broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by Global Nutritional Research, maker of Clotamin, a multivitamin designed for people on blood thinners, at clotamin.com. From the German Embassy, presenting Germany Info, a web publication with daily news from Germany, business and investment information, and suggestions for travel to Europe, on the web at germany.info. And by the Annie E. Casey Foundation, working to help vulnerable kids and families succeed at aecf.org. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
Pat Tillman walked away from a multi-million dollar NFL contract to fight with U.S. Special Forces. He was killed in Afghanistan 2 years later. How the Army tried to keep his family and the public from learning the truth about his death. The Diane Rehm Show, next hour. Welcome back. It's time to open the phones, 800-433-8850. Let's go to Williamsburg, Virginia. Good morning, Matt. You're on the air.
Good morning, Diane.
Hi, Ben.
And thank you very much for doing this show. It's a subject that's a passion of mine, and you don't often see it covered in much of the media. So I just wanted to make a quick comment, if I could. I'm a business owner, and I'm involved. I see firsthand international trade, specifically with China. I'm in the seafood industry, where quite a bit of seafood, most of this, about 70 to 80% of the seafood consumed in the United States right now is actually imported from all over the world. And yet we have some extraordinary trade cases, very similar to what just happened in tires going on with seafood. And I guess my only comment or two would be, number one, I really see firsthand the jobs that are lost in this country when we do things like this. Every single thing that's imported into this country goes through shipping ports, rail, truckers, warehouses. There are a number of jobs that are absolutely lost when these things happen that are not replaced unless truly there's just complete unutilized domestic production that just takes its place overnight. And that is usually not the case. So I do get a little frustrated when, listening to a lot of the debate about this, because I don't think there's a lot of debate about global trade being a job provider, but it's a provider over a course of time, and so it doesn't have immediate political payoff for folks, and I think that's one of the reasons that it's such a political hot potato.
Thanks for calling, Matt. You know, I was so surprised the other day. A friend brought me a pound of crab meat that was labeled Phillips, which is certainly a name I know from the Eastern Shore. And then in the small print, it says imported from Indonesia. So our friend Matt is talking about not only tires, but seafood coming into this country, Fred.
An important point that we have not yet mentioned is that the imports themselves create a lot of domestic jobs. The retailers who sell imports have a lot of job creation. In the tire case, the distributors and installers of tires take those imports from China, process them through their stores, put them on the cars of American drivers, and those are jobs. If those imports disappear, then those jobs are going to be adversely affected as well.
So,
does anybody credibly believe that Americans are going to stop buying tires simply because we stop buying from China?
If the price goes up, which it will.
They're going to drive less and burn up fewer tires? I doubt it, seriously.
Well, let's hear from somebody who's in Heartland, Vermont. Kenny, you're on the air.
All right, good morning.
Morning, sir.
Yeah, I kind of want to piggyback on what he was saying. I kind of see, I'm a co-owner of a trucking company. We buy a lot of tires, and we buy a lot of tires from the Pacific Rim, you know, Korea and China. And the reason we buy them is they're considerably cheaper. And I see this as a populist handout from Obama to more of his union base. Most of the American tire companies are union. The reason their tires are more expensive, they have the same problems that the auto companies had. Their health care legacy costs and their retiree legacy costs are much higher than anybody else. We have to pay for those as consumers. And, you know, I lease to a tire company who sells Chinese tires, and it's going to put a hurt on all of us. I see this as another bailout to union labor disguised as an import tariff.
Bert.
Well, I think both callers, Kurt and Kenny, are making great points. And I don't think anybody's going to argue that tire production in the United States is going to go down in the coming decade or more. And that there's any question that the jobs in logistics and related services related to international trade are going to grow dramatically. The question is, how fast does this impact jobs in the United States, and how quickly can we adjust? And so the agreement that we have with China is that we have safeguards to make sure that that adjustment isn't so damaging. Now, what does so damaging mean? This is the kind of thing that needs arbitration. And to be bailing out or be populist in the face of American labor demands, that's a politician's decision to hold together a political group that is moving in the right direction for the whole country on a whole range of issues. That's a politician's job. It's a tough job. And so I have to sort of stop and say, okay, if this is his judgment, President Obama's judgment, at this time, given all the things on his plate, and what the way I've seen him not go after the Chinese on the exchange rate issue, I have to say there's probably something to the idea of slowing down the impact.
All right. To Joaquim, who's in Miami, Florida. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. I just wanted to provide the point of view. I'm the CEO for a wholesaler in Miami, and the effect that this is going to have is just going right down to the consumer. Who are the people that are buying the Chinese tires? Are those that can't afford the U.S.-made product? At the end of the day, and again, I am in the industry, the American manufacturers yesterday announced a 12% increase on their pricing. They're going to continue to have their spread on the Chinese product. So at the end of the day, this, you know, for saving 10,300 union jobs, which that's what the manufacturer union job is based on, they stand to lose between 12 and 25 jobs on a study that one of the economists from Rutgers University did, and it was published in the Wall Street Journal. So this is a tax, again, that is straightly going to go right to the consumer, and this is something that obviously that I think Obama made his decision just to, like the previous caller said, to appease his union base, which are the people that got him in office.
Robert Scott.
The impact of this decision on tire pricing is going to be minimal. The ITC estimated it would amount to about $3.50 a tire on average in the United States. This is not going to have a big hurtful impact on either domestic consumers or businesses.
I don't understand why the price is going to go up if, in fact, we are importing cheaper tires.
No, Diane, the point is we've just increased the price of those cheaper tires. The 35% tariff adds to the price of the cheapest tires. These callers, I will rest my case, they made the point from the trenches, this is going to hurt consumers.
The study he referred to
shows that the consumer cost per job saved is an astronomical $300,000 to $500,000. The cost-benefit ratio is incredibly negative.
Robert.
Well, I think what we're ignoring here is the fact that these measures are designed to give the domestic industry time to adjust, to invest, to become more productive, for workers to work with management, to make tires more efficiently, and that will bring the cost down.
Do you think
this is what happened in the steel industry in 2001. Our steel industry did recover when it was given surge protection. So this kind of policy can work.
And it also it allows other countries to increase their market share at prices that were competitive before, so that it's really not necessarily an issue of prices all going up very, very quickly. It's a question of restructuring and also providing some relief, at least politically and symbolically, which I say is important for the strengthening of U.S. engagement with China in a whole range of issues.
All right. To Shaker Heights, Ohio. Good morning, Beverly.
Good morning. And thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
This is Diane Ring Show. I love NPR. And the reason that I'm calling today is because this is also a passion for me. I'm a business owner as well. And, you know, my family, we refused to buy foreign cars, Japanese cars. But what hurts consumers more than anything is job loss. Now, my husband is an electrical engineer and was off after 23 years at one of our companies here, and, you know, is now back in school to get a different degree. But the thing is, it just makes common sense to me and to a whole lot of other Americans that if we continue to export jobs, and all we're importing products, but we're exporting jobs. And what hurts consumers and what hurts retailers is when we can't afford to buy the products we would normally buy and take the vacations that we would normally take and spend the money that we would normally spend because we don't have jobs. That is just plain and simple. It's across the board.
All right. Thanks for your call, Bert.
I think the caller clearly is right to say that this can have a terrible shock on families, and we're seeing in this depression, recession, that it's going to be much worse than it has for a very long time. I have to say, though, I'm an economist that says, you know, there are going to be better jobs, and some of these jobs aren't going to come back because that's the way that modernization occurs. We don't have a chance out-competing China over the next 10 or 15 or 20 or 30 years in a lot of the lower technology, lower-end products. We need to retool our whole economy, and that requires a lot of mobility, and that's why I think healthcare reform, pension reform, and a whole range of ancillary reforms in addition to trade adjustment assistance are absolutely critical.
What about the human effect on the workers of China? What about the conditions under which they produce the kind of tires that we are freely importing, or at least up until now? Isn't there kind of a difference to be made in the calculation of what we should be paying these workers?
You know, Diane, that there are some terrible examples of working conditions in China. And the Chinese have passed labor laws that actually have gotten a lot of complaints from their employers, even from foreign investors from Taiwan and Hong Kong, about a burden that these labor laws put on them. But if you say to a Chinese worker who lives in a rural area and doesn't really have enough money to buy a whole range of things that they want, including health care, to say, well, we're just not going to have these jobs in the coastal zones because they're not as good quality jobs as jobs in developed countries. They're going to laugh in your face. They're ready to move, to go do this work and work hard at it, because for them it's a path up and a path up for their children. Mm-hmm. And so there are abuses in Chinese workplaces, but there are many examples where Chinese workplaces are clean and healthy. And so just like here, those are fronts that need to be given a lot of attention, both within China and internationally, but they shouldn't be a reason to stop trade in these products.
All right, let's go to Peterborough, Vermont. New Hampshire. Anna, you're on the air.
Hi. A couple of things. Number one, I think that, you know, all of this talk about protectionism and, you know, whether we should import or not is missing the point. You know, you were talking earlier about, the economic growth in this country. But if you break the numbers down, you'll find that the growth is only in the top, you know, like 1%, and the bottom 80% has been declining. And I think that what you really find is that as long as the CEOs are greedy and they want to make the top dollars for themselves, and as long as American consumers want to buy the best deal, you're not going to solve this problem.
All right. Thanks for calling. Fred, any comment?
We certainly need better policies to redistribute income in the country. Better health insurance is one. Better Social Security is another. Better retraining and education is a part of the agenda. So the caller is exactly right. But restricting trade hurts the poorest people. It's the low-income people that get huge benefits from the cheaper imports, as two of the earlier callers talked about, and to cut them off from that would be to make their poverty worse.
At 7 minutes before the hour, you're listening to The Diane Rehm Show. And to Lodi, Ohio, good morning, Lou. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Diane. Thank you for taking my
call.
It's not just the Chinese tire business. I actually have two things to mention. I'm in the medical supply business. We used to represent a company out of Platteville, Mass. They have outsourced their production and got rid of a lot of their people to the Dominican Republic. So we see it there. The quality of the products is way, way, way down, which is impacting the quality, in our opinion, of healthcare. The prices are cheap, but it's not just China that is affecting a lot of the jobs here in the United States. They went from 160 people in the factory down to 47, and we're finding that the FDA, as a general rule, is keeping their hands off because of all the economic downturn issues. And secondly, I understand the Chinese premier is going to be visiting President Obama next week, and he will be flying the People's Republic of China flag over the White House. I find that incredible. And I'd love to, you know, hear the comments off the air.
All right. Thanks for calling. Robert Scott.
Well, I think the last several callers have hit at a key point. Some of these numbers that Fred has thrown out about the great benefits of trade, I think, are based on theoretical models. These models assume things like totally full employment. Well, we don't have totally full employment. We haven't had it for decades. And in the real world, as one of the callers mentioned, wages have been falling for most workers in this economy, and that is related to the growth in these structural trade deficits over the last 25 or 30 years. Yes, as Fred said, the deficit's gone down in the last couple of years, largely because of the recession. But if you look at the long-run trend, that deficit has been going up,
but
and
surely,
it's projected to keep going up.
Surely we cannot be talking about an isolated country that does not trade.
Well, that's right. And I think we're clearly in a world that trade needs to expand throughout. But the question is, what pattern, how fast, what protections are some countries allowed to keep? The income distribution in the United States, there are a lot of things that are very unpopular to do. Graduated income taxes that can be raised in various ways. A minimum wage, which is quite a sad development here. Inheritance taxes. These are all things that can help correct. But on Lou's point, I think that U.S. product quality is not something that we should turn over to other countries. We need to spend more, train more, have a much stronger set of regulatory agencies that watch all the kinds of products that Americans consume and make sure that they're safe. And the flag over the White House, I think, please get used to it, because this is going to be one of the most important partners as we try to solve global problems going ahead.
Well, there will not be any flag over the White House, because the Chinese premier is coming to Pittsburgh, and they're going to meet there at the G20. So he can relax about that. But I want to come back to a key point that Robert made. He compared the China tire case to the steel restrictions of 6 or 7 years ago, which had some favorable effects. And I defended those. Here's the difference. The restrictions on steel imports applied to imports from all countries.
They applied across the board. This new tire tariff applies to one and only one country, China. It is always folly to restrict imports from one country. It doesn't work because there are lots of other countries that sell tires to us. In this case, the other suppliers sell us 3 to 4 times as many tires as China does. So we restrict from China. Brazil picks up. Mexico picks up. There's no net change in imports, and there's therefore no improvement for U.S. workers and output.
This discussion is going to go on and on and on. Thank you all so much. Fred Bergsten, he's with the Peterson Institute, Albert Keitel of the Atlantic Council, Robert Scott of the Economic Policy Institute. And just to remind our listeners, there will not be a flag flying over the White House.
Thank you, Diane.
Thank you, Diane.
Thank you, and thanks for listening, all. I'm Diane Rehm.
The Diane Rehm Show is produced by Sandra Pinkard, Nancy Robertson, Jonathan Smith, Susan Neighbors, and Denise Couture. The engineer is Toby Schreiner. Dori Annisman answers the phones. Visit drshow.org for audio archives and CD sales, transcripts from SoftScribe, and podcasts. Call 202-885-1200 for more information. Our email address is drshow@wamu.org. This program comes to you from American University in Washington. This is NPR, National Public Radio.